We are our grandmother's prayers. We are our grandfather's dreaming. We are the breath of our ancestors. We are the Spirit of God. We have come from those who came before us. We did not create ourselves. We were created by those who loved us into being. And deep within us, whether we want this or not, we carry the lives of those whose lives created us. And at the same time, we have within us the seeds of the future. We plant these seeds in our children. We are the link from our parents' past to our children's futures. We do not live or exist in an isolated, unaffected place in society. No. We are the link of the past into the future. We are a part of the sacred chain. When my son Andrew was 17, he had his senior picture taken by a local firm in Lancaster, where I live. It was a beautiful photo, a nice angle of his face, a clear and calm expression, rare in a 17-year-old, I know. He was my first child, and I was and still am so excited about every part of the progress of his life. At 17, he looked somewhere in between youth and adulthood, a lively point of stillness in an active life. It was when I framed his senior picture and put it on our shelf that I saw the resemblance. I placed that picture next to the photo of my father, taken in his Navy uniform, a picture from his early 20s. And then I saw it. My son looked just like my father, the father I lost when I was only 17 myself. There was something about the shape of their faces, the cast of their eyes, the quiet smile, the vulnerable beauty of their youth. It took my breath away. And as I go back to those pictures today, still side by side, I remember a few things. My son was never able to meet my father, but he carries within him the genes that made him who he is through me. I am the conduit from my dad to my son, whether or not they met each other. And the stories I share with my son to help him know his grandfather are the only way that he will ever know his own ancestry. As I share the stories, as I remember the times that we did have together when I was a little child, I remember the values that I also carry within me, the values my dad received from his family, and the values that inform my life. What we receive from our parents is more than their genetic material. We are shaped by the decisions that they made in their lives. We are carried into our futures by the choices they made to live their dreams. Our economic health is shaped by the circumstances of our birth. In this country, if we were born into poverty, we are more likely to remain there. If we were born into wealth, we are more likely to expect that for ourselves. If we were born into an abusive system, we are more likely to repeat the cycles of violence or sexual abuse in which we were shaped. And if we were born into love and acceptance, we are more likely to treat those we meet with that same openness and generosity of heart. This morning, I would like to explore how we view the history that has shaped us. Can we choose what to pass along to the next generation and what we might want to leave behind? There are some things which are worth keeping, but there are others which are best left behind if we want to make our lives into the joyous existence that we all long for. One of our most significant life tasks is to shape our lives into stories. Stories we can tell ourselves when the evening light grows dim. Stories we can share about each other around a hospital bed. When we need to hear the humor of life to keep us going. Stories of courage. Stories of grit. Stories of forgiveness. Stories of romance. Our lives are interwoven with each other's lives through the shaping and the telling of our stories. It is important which stories we choose to remember. How many times have we been embarrassed into silence by someone sharing a story of us which we wish they would not remember, let alone repeat? Why do our parents and siblings feel the need to share those horrible tales of adolescence to our significant others? I remember still the sting of flaming cheeks as my sisters laughingly repeated something childish to a young man that I was interested in. I wanted the dignity of being able to represent myself as I chose to see myself rather than as the annoying little sister of two very annoying college girls. I'll spare you the details. But it had something to do with letting slip into spoken word that silly nickname by which they constantly teased me. But as I look back at this, even in the midst of remembering the ever-ready sense of shame, I know that learning to laugh at myself is a lesson learned rather painfully. But it is a lesson I needed to learn. Perhaps I wanted to come into that in my own time. But I trust that my siblings did not tell their story to harm me. Despite all the pangs of growing up together in one small household, we have all learned to love each other and respect each other. But there are some stories of our past which are harder to reshape. Many of us here today have been shaped through painful experiences of harm. Some of us have been exposed to things that as children that no child should ever see. Some of us have felt the blows of violence or the emptiness of neglect. And to honor our ancestry does not mean that we need to dwell on those painful parts of our past, nor does it mean that we need to pretend that they did not happen. What I hope for us as we explore throughout our lives is that we will choose to celebrate that which we want to keep from our pasts and let the other pieces fly off like chaff in the winnowing basket of time. We live within the mythology of our lives. By mythology, I mean the beliefs and convictions that people have about themselves, about their relationships with others. It is the way that we interpret what we've been told. We each find in ourselves a dominant myth out of which we come. And what we've been told about the circumstances of our births, whether we were loved and expected or not, where we came in our birth order, what our parents expected of us, how we came to be, all of these things shape the myth of our birth. Now, there are some myths which are positive influences on our development, but there are many which we have formed about ourselves and our circumstances which are not positive, and which actively work against our ability to live a life of fulfillment and joy. Now, one common myth that many of us struggle with is the myth of rejection. This is the belief that you are unwanted, even unwelcome in life. This might have come out of a birth narrative. Perhaps you were an unexpected child. Perhaps you are still struggling with the knowledge that you were adopted and don't understand the circumstances around that. Perhaps you were one of a large family and just felt that there was too much going on for you to be truly noticed. There are many sources of this sense of feeling rejected as a child, especially for those of us drawn to this Unitarian Universalist faith tradition of questioning and exploring our doubts. Because if we didn't fit into the religious expectation of our parents, we feel left out, and we question our suitability within that large family system. Let me tell you this morning that if you feel that way, you are not alone. Just look around you, and I suspect that you will see many in these pews who grew up with that same sense of not fitting in theologically. Another myth we carry may be the myth of being powerless. The sense that other people have more control over their lives than we do, that things happen to us, that we have no real choice or decision-making ability. If this is our abiding myth, we have a deep sense that it makes no difference what we do because we will have no effect on our own lives, let alone have the power to positively affect our environment and our world. if this myth is one you connect with, and perhaps you can find a way to shift this view because you want to understand how it's impacting you. We all have some choices to make in this world, and we all can work to make positive change, no matter how small. Another myth, one carried by many women, is that of the good girl. Now, this one is tough, as women are often raised to respect authority, to listen to others, to do what we're told. Good girls are rewarded, we're admonished. The myth of the good girl is the conviction that you must be good and gracious at all costs. It is rooted in feelings that you cannot be angry or upset because this will make others uncomfortable. The goal is perfect goodness, which of course is not a possible goal. We are human. We make mistakes. We have a right to be angry or upset, but this myth causes us to squelch those very human reactions. So if you take time to explore what your own story is, when you pause from your busy week, perhaps even this morning, here in this sacred space, what do you find? I encourage you to identify what the founding story of your life might be. Is it a story that fills you with purpose and hope? Or is it a story that weighs you down with rejection, powerlessness, or the sense that you must be good at all times and ignore your humanity? My friends, you have within you the ability to shift that story if you want to. You have within you the ability to reauthor your own story, because we shape the story we tell about ourselves by ascribing meaning and memory where we choose to place it. We select out of our history the events and conversations that we choose to give weight to, and we can choose how to respond to the circumstances of our upbringing as we move through our lives. This is deep work, perhaps best accomplished with the help of a trusted friend. We are influenced not only by the mythology of our own lives, but we are influenced by the religious mythology of the creation of our world. What do you believe about how this world came into being? How has that shaped your understanding of who you are and why you are here? And are any of you as excited as I am about the discovery of gravity waves and how that might shape the story of the origins of this universe? In the Judeo-Christian tradition, the pervasive belief is that a loving creator crafted this world into place so that the inhabitants can worship God. This version of the creation story led to a culture which places the love of God and the love of humanity first and foremost. The greatest commandments are to love God and to love each other. But as our culture moves away from the biblical understanding of creation, many of us are wrestling with a sense of disconnect from that loving idea of a creator. As our scientific understanding of how the earth was formed takes precedence, what happens to our religious understanding of why the earth was formed? I think this move away has caused a great disconnect. If we don't believe in the intentional creation of a loving God, what do we believe? In his book, The Holy Universe, David Christopher wrestles with that question. He begins his work by saying, like so many people who left the faiths of their youth, as an adult, I still yearned to believe in something. But just as the religious interpretations of the scriptures I grew up with proved deeply unsatisfying to me, so too did the cold, factual stories of modern science fail to speak to my spirit. And so he has refashioned the story of the origin of our earth and her inhabitants into a modern poetic retelling of creation. I'd like to share with you the beginning of this modern poem. It was the beginning of all beginnings. It was a time of no time, for time did not exist, a place of no place, for space did not exist. It was a beginning like no other, for there was no before, There was no time. There was no place. There was only the infinite and the unfathomable mystery. And the unfathomable mystery was all that was to be. And all that was to be was small, smaller than the tiniest particle, in the tiniest atom, in the tiniest dream. Although there was nowhere from which to see how small all that was to be was, for there was no outside and no inside, no here, no there, no now, no then, no darkness, no light. There was nothing save a whisper of what might be, an infinitesimal, indescribable, unfathomable mystery. And out of that unfathomable mystery, the infinite called forth unto itself. It called forth space. It called forth time. It called forth being. And in that ecstatic instance, the universe slammed, exploding outward into existence with the jubilant and breathtaking beauty, brightness, energy, violence, power, and glory of a trillion newborn stars. A perfect explosion. And in the instance of this perfect explosion, the infinite began a brilliant and fierce cycle of gloriously creating, violently destroying, and gloriously creating once more, as if it knew what it was doing. Christopher joins with Brian Swim and Thomas Berry and the other new eco-theologians in looking for new meaning in the old stories of creation, applying scientific understanding to the quest for meaning, and positioning humanity in the midst of creation rather than over and above creation as we move forward. We need to remain in relationship with all of creation, not just with humanity. We need to find meaning in the entire world around us, not just the human constraints of society and culture. We are a part of the culture of the whole earth, and as such are an integral part of all creation. If we do not see ourselves as a part of the whole web of life, we lose our sense of meaning. We become lost in the sense of irrelevance and powerlessness that prevents us from doing the good work that we need to do to protect this fragile planet and this even more fragile mass of humanity. For if in the isolation we impose upon ourselves, we see ourselves as disconnected from each other and from this world, we become lost. And without a religious identity which helps us to understand how we are connected, we lose our ability to work for the good. So I'd like to close with David Christopher's poetry as he finds meaning within the infinite mystery of existence. He says, "Humanity is neither insignificant nor meaningless. For this creative force of the infinite, this drive to greater complexity and greater order, has taken billions and billions of years to create the universe and its galaxies, and billions more to create Earth, the web of life, humanity, and to create you. In a mysterious and profound way, the infinite wants Earth. The infinite wants life. The infinite wants humanity. The infinite wants you. While you are no more precious than any other being in the web of life, you are certainly no less precious either. You, along with all of the beings of the web of life, you too are a child of the universe, created out of sacred stardust, a child of the infinite, which is a great mysterious process that somehow wants you. Yet the fledgling sciences of modern mind denied this, and we still suffer from this denial. and the resulting alienation from the universe, the isolation from the web of life, the estrangement from Earth and the rest of humanity, is the greatest of tragedies. For how in the world, how in the universe, could you be anything other than yet another delightful creation in the infinite's primordial dreams? Earth, life, and you are all precious beyond comprehension, called forth by the mysterious creativity of the infinite. My friends, you, all of you, all of us, we are precious beyond comprehension. This is the sacred chain that is worth claiming for ourselves and worth passing on to our children and our children's children. We are each precious beyond measure. May you rest in that sure knowledge today and in the days to come. Amen, and blessed be.